Welcome to Flicks of Doom, the official movie podcast of Geeks of Doom. I'm Empress Eve, and here with me is my little Coco Pebble, Justin Vactor.
Yeah!
Joining us for this episode is the very sexy, very knowledgeable Frank Ramblings from Tech Ramblings. Welcome, Frank.
Good evening, everybody. How are you all doing today?
He's available, ladies.
Hey, howdy, hey, that's me on a yo-yo.
This week we'll be discussing the Toy Story franchise as well as the latest news and box office results. Justin, why don't you tell our listeners where they can find us?
They can always go over to geeksofdoom.com or they can search us out on Twitter. It's Flicks, F-L-I-X, of Doom. And they can search for us in iTunes, Flicks of Doom. Leave us a lovely review and we will be happy. So once again, that's geeksofdoom.com.
Now for the news this week, I didn't think anything was very, very exciting this week. There was a lot of rumors, and I pretty much hate rumors, and I hate speculation, and I hate stories that are like, hey, this studio wants this actor to be in this movie. And I'm like, well, who gives a crap? Like, let me know when someone's hired, right? See, I don't know how you guys feel.
I disagree because I think it's fun to talk about the possibility of, okay, what if, it's almost like, Frank, we have in the comic book world, the Elseworlds books where, you know, your favorite character, what if this happened? What if a small, tiny change happened? How would this character's life be affected? So, like, I remember when Bradley Cooper was being talked about for Green Lantern, thinking about what would a Green Lantern movie be like with Bradley Cooper versus Ryan Reynolds, who in the past, Ryan Reynolds has been more of a comedic actor and his sensibilities are a lot different than Bradley Cooper's. So that's why I like talking about rumors. And also, it's nice to have a little historical when you watch a movie and say, hey, you know, Jake Gyllenhaal almost played Spider-Man in the sequel because Tobey Maguire's back was hurt. So it's fun to say, oh, this, what might have been. That's why I like talking about him.
I mean, yeah, well,
I agree.
I agree with that to a certain extent. I just feel like the sources that these rumors are coming from are iffy at best. Oh, yeah. And I feel like okay, we could go to Geeks of Doom and I could say, oh, you know, this person was hired for Spider-Man. My sources tell me, don't worry about who they are. Don't worry. You know, but they tell me. And it's like, you know, how do I know that? I can't give any real attribution, you know, and a lot of these sites I feel are just sort of making it up or, you know, I don't know who they're getting it from. And I just feel like there's just too much rumor out there. And I feel like, you know, it would be a different story if like the Hollywood Reporter said, oh, you know, our sources tell us this and that. Then you could be like, well, you know, that's probably like 80% chance that it's true. But, you know, when Joe Schmo, you know, website goes, yeah, you know, like the janitor at, you know, Warner Brothers overheard, you know, this and that. It's like, you know, I get like really sick of it, you know, especially those British tabloids, like they are just out of control.
Oh,
and,
gosh.
You know, and then when they write about it, every little tiny, you know, from the biggest blog to the smallest blog to every, even like Entertainment Weekly will jump on and it's just so sickening. You know, I kind of just want it to be a little more condensed and, you know, a little like more legitimate. You know, it's like if it's a rumor, like I want it to be a rumor that is kind of possible, you know, like that.
Right.
That's all.
Yeah, that's the part that I hate, too. I when everyone starts jumping on the bandwagon and we're all talking about this rumor that one person started,
right.
I can't stand that. But to add to what Justin said, I agree with that. It is fun to speculate like, oh, what if this person did play this role and that kind of stuff. But then when one nobody says it and then all the bigwigs start jumping on, too, I don't care.
The
discussion never ends.
Yeah, exactly. I'd rather read an article where, like, let's say Justin wrote an article that says, like, these five people, these are five people I think could be Spider-Man. You know, I'd rather read that and then talk about that than have these rumors. And not only that, like you said, it like spreads and then people stop reporting it as rumor and they start reporting it as fact.
Exactly.
Like the fact that it's a rumor gets lost and I find that really irritating. So actually there's one piece of news I had wanted to talk about was this David Duchovny had said that X-File 3 movie is in the works and that they're just awaiting for it to be greenlit. And supposedly he said this to a French magazine called TV Mag. And now I don't know when this was November 6th, I think. And now these other websites are saying, oh, we spoke to people, unnamed sources, who are saying that David Duchovny never said that. It was like lost in translation from the French magazine. But yet no one is naming their sources. So again, it's like that would be like me going online and I'm going to say, oh, I spoke to people and they said David Duchovny didn't say that. That's not true. So. Mm-hmm. So now back to square one. you can't even take the words from the actor's mouth as being truthful. But for X-Files, like, what do you guys think about an X-Files 3 movie?
I'm not excited about a third one. I wasn't a big fan of the first one or the second one. Mm-hmm. And I just don't know what else there is to tell with that storyline.
Yeah, I'm in the same boat.
Well, I mean, were you guys fans of the TV show?
I watched it off and on, but when that was airing, I didn't even know, you know, there was episodic television, or there was serialized television. I just tuned in randomly to episodes. I didn't know they connected or anything like that. I wasn't the same television watcher that I am today. So the X-Files, I remember it being a big part of popular culture and being referenced on a lot of things. And I remember my dad being a fan of it, but I never got into it. I watched just random episodes.
What about you, Frank?
Yeah, actually, same situation again. I was not only was I a different TV watcher, I wasn't really a TV watcher at the time. Also, I was much younger, so I was definitely aware of it, but I wasn't a huge. Well, I did catch the odd episode, and I've seen a lot more since the time that it's been off the air. But I've seen the films, and I don't know. It just doesn't. It's a really good series, something that I absolutely intend to watch the entire thing of as soon as I get the chance. But it's never been exactly my thing, so I would probably see a third film, sure.
Well, I was a fan of the television show when it was originally on. I wouldn't say that I was 100% faithful. I mean, I wasn't running home to see it every week, but I did catch it as much as possible, and I enjoyed it, and I think it was a really great show, and I catch it on reruns when it's on, and I really love it, and it reminds me a little bit of the way Smallville is, the way there's, like, every fourth episode, there's, like, a monster of the week kind of thing. That's how this one, it was, like, the alien of the week kind of thing, and
yeah, they have a very similar structure of the standalone episodes and then the mythology episodes, which are overarching storylines.
The first film I thought was pretty good. I mean, it was nothing earth-shattering. It felt a lot like just a big episode. So that was – I mean, it was fine. The second movie was terrible. It was completely embarrassingly terrible. And after – that movie, I really thought they were just going to pack it in. So I'm not sure why they would make a third movie unless they really were going to change it up completely. Like, it has to go the complete opposite direction of the second film, because whatever the way they were going, it's just terrible. So I'm not sure why they would sink more money into it. I don't know. I mean, I went to go see it. I think it was during Comic-Con of 2009, whatever year the movie came out, I don't even remember right now, but it was that July, it was during Comic-Con, me and Dave went, Dave 3, Geeks of Doom, my main squeeze, we went to go see it, and the theater was like totally empty, and I remember also the guys from Slash Film were there, and they, like, they were at Comic-Con too, and we had all talked about how, like, yeah, we should, like, you know, during some downtime, we'll go see this movie. And David Chen and Adam Quigley, I remember they went, like, at a different time, and they said they were the only two people in the theater.
Oh, yeah, I remember their review.
Remember that? Yeah, they're the only two people in the theater.
It was July of 2008.
Okay, 2008, right. So they went during Comic-Con also, and they were the only people in their theater, and then when me and Dave went, there was maybe like five other people in the theater with us, and that was just when the movie came out. So,
well, it did pretty good. On a $30 million budget, it ended up grossing $68 million. So
really?
It definitely had its fans, and people were... There's always been those diehard X-Files fans, so following a film that came out 10 years prior... The previous film was 98. There was a lot of built-up anticipation for the movie. So I think it still has an audience, but like I said, I just don't know where the story is going to go, because the second movie, and I didn't dislike it as much as you did, Eve, but I felt like it was what you said about the first film, just a long episode and not even one of the good episodes. It was
right. Yeah, exactly.
Yeah. And it was one of the, like, I felt like it was one of the Monster of the Week episodes.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, absolutely.
So,
well, I guess we'll just have to wait and see if this movie actually get, you know, is it really in the works? Is it going to get greenlit? What the real story is? We'll see. Also, I had one other news story that I wanted to talk about. Justin, you want to tell us about it?
Eve is a massive Neil Gaiman fan. If there's anyone who... I think of, when I think of Neil Gaiman, it's Eve. So, apparently, Neil Gaiman's The Price gets a film adaptation. You can help it get made. Eve, how can they do that?
Yay! Well, I'm very excited because now's the time I wish I was sort of like an independently wealthy person, or like maybe a Kennedy, where I could just be like, yes, I will, you know, help finance this movie. But this aspiring filmmaker, he created a mock-up, a storyboard. It's called, what the hell is it called? I can't remember what it's called, but it's like a mock-up, and it was like a little film that he used as a proposal for Neil Gaiman's short story, The Price, which you can read in his Smoke and Mirrors book. And it's about this black cat that comes to this family's house and lives on the porch, and each night, like, these strange things happen, and you know, the main character is sort of trying to figure out, like, what's up with this cat, and like, what's these weird things that are happening around the house and such. And, you know, it's all about how he goes about to try to discover what's happening, and the supernatural elements. And it's just really cool. It's very, I mean, it's like totally, it's so Neil Gaiman. It's not even funny. It's like epitome of Neil Gaiman. It's so great. And so, Animatic, that's what it's called. So it's like this motion storyboard mock-up type of thing. Mm-hmm. But it was done so well. It was just filmed so well. And it's up online at Kickstarter.com. And like what Kickstarter is, which I had never heard of before, apparently people can put up like their projects and say, I need X amount of dollars. And then you can go and donate as little as $10 towards their project. And there's a deadline for this one. It's December 1st. And so this filmmaker needs $150,000 before December 1st to actually go ahead and get this movie made. And that's to cover, I guess, not only just the cost of doing the actual work, but, you know, he would have to buy equipment to do the filming with and to do the computer animation. He has to hire a composer and an orchestra to do the music. You hear a little bit of the music already in it. And, you know, like he just, it would take a lot of money to actually bring this to life in a really cool way. So, and the great thing about it is that Neil Gaiman pretty much gave his permission, like, yeah, you can, you know, like, he was very impressed by the animatic, and he offered to narrate the little proposal. So if you go online, if you go to geeksofdoom.com and you look at the article for this, it's called Wanna See Neil Gaiman's The Price get a film adaptation, you can help get it made. So if you go and look at that, and we put the video in there, and you can watch it, and there's a little bit of interview footage in there too. And so I went and I donated towards it, and it was like, I think it was, if you donate something like $1,000, you can be given an associate producer credit. I think that was it. And I was like, oh, I wish I just had like $1,000 and had nothing to do with it. And like, I would love like to have my name on a Neil Gaiman film, like as associate producer, like that. That's a dream. Like, I should start a Kickstarter project where people give me the money to be the associate producer on Neil Gaiman movie. That's what I should do.
I pulled it up here. You get associate producer credit. You get a signed Blu-ray combo and a poster and a special gift pack of Neil Gaiman merchandise. Or if you pledge $5,000 or more, you get all that plus you get to attend the theatrical screening of the movie in Boston in the VIP section with Neil Gaiman.
Right. You get to sit with him.
Mm-hmm.
So, I mean, look, I wouldn't even aspire to the $5,000 one. I was just aspired to the $1,000 one. So you want me to be an associate producer on the Neil Gaiman The Price movie, you go ahead and send those donations to me so I could be an associate producer. But anyway, no, seriously. No, I am serious. But no, you can donate to the Kickstarter project. And like I said, you could donate as little as $10. I land up donating the $85 one, and I blame Justin in part because, like, the $85 one is the Blu-ray package where you get Blu-ray and you get some other stuff. Yeah. And, you know, I could have went cheaper and gotten the DVD version, but no. I was like, no.
Hi, Jeff.
Now I have to have – because Justin, you know, like, brainwashed me into Blu-ray, and so now I have to have the Blu-ray version. But, Justin, I think you're going to want it too because apparently he's going to be doing this whole 3D filming and, you know, all that kind of stuff that you like, you know, like the CG and, you know, all that stuff. Like, I was reading it. I'm like, oh, this is total Justin. Like, Justin will love this. So, yeah. But yeah, I hope he makes it. I hope he gets his $150,000. That would be really cool. We need more Neil Gaiman, based movies, in my opinion. Frank, do you like Neil Gaiman stuff?
Absolutely.
Yay!
Absolutely. I would love to see this get made.
Looking good, yeah. So let's hope everyone donate. And now we go to Justin's favorite segment, the box office.
Yeah. Well, the two big movies that opened this week in wide release were Megamind and Due Date. And actually, it was a big weekend just in general. And I was surprised by this. The weekend box office totals was $160 million. So for this being a non-holiday, non-anything weekend, it was kind of surprising that this much money was spent on movies this weekend. Megamind came in first with $47 million. Due Date pulled in $33 million. Which is pretty good, although the budget for that movie is $65 million on a road trip comedy. I don't know why.
Because they had to pay the actors.
Mm. Yeah, basically.
And smaller for you Tyler Perry fans, For Colored Girls opened at $20 million. And rounding out the top five, Red pulled in another $8 million, and Saw 3D pulled in another $8 million. So the big winners was Megamind and Due Date. Now, Megamind, this is the third DreamWorks animated 3D film after How to Train Your Dragon earlier this year, which pulled in $43 million, and then Shrek Forever After, which made $70 million. So, big year for DreamWorks animation.
Justin, do you think Megamind should have been the big winner?
Yeah, out of the new movies that came out this week, I think Megamind was definitely my favorite film. I saw all of the releases, except for Colored Girls, which I had a screening for, but I missed it because I was recording a Mad Men podcast. But yeah, I think Megamind is definitely the week's winner. And I was telling Frank earlier, he's a big Superman fan. There are Superman references, there are parodies, there are in-jokes, side gags that only big Superman and superhero fans will get. So it's definitely worth seeing in 3D as well, because I feel like this is the second best use of 3D this year after How to Train Your Dragon.
And what about Due Date? All I want to know is, was it funny? Because for some reason, even though I love Robert Downey Jr., and so far I have thought that Zach Galifianakis is funny, but for some reason, I don't know, the trailers are just, they didn't get me that much. So was it actually funny?
Yeah, I enjoyed it. I laughed a lot, actually. There was a lot of, if you liked The Hangover, it's a lot of similar crazy style of humor, like things that just make no sense and they come out of nowhere and their ridiculousness. That's, if you like that style of humor, you'll like Due Date. And if you like Robert Downey Jr. and Zach Galifianakis, they are the real reasons to see the movie. It's them being themselves pretty much. And yeah, they're on a road trip. And but I didn't think it was a great overall film because it's not really a cohesive storyline. It's a lot of gags and, okay, how do we get to the next gag kind of movie? That's right. How I felt. But I did laugh a lot in the theater, and my audience that I saw it with enjoyed it as well, but not as good as Todd Phillips' previous movies like Old School or The Hangover.
So I don't even know what's coming out next week.
Next week is Unstoppable with Denzel Washington and Chris Pine, your boy.
That's right. See, that would get me to go see it. Chris Pine.
Mm-hmm. And let's see, Skyline, which is the, I think it's the J.J. Abrams sci-fi film.
No.
The other movie that's coming out, Morning Glory, is J.J. Abrams. It's Bad Robot.
It is?
Yeah.
I had no idea.
Mm-hmm. Wow.
J.J. Abrams, man. Seriously.
Yeah.
He's everywhere.
What is he doing in that movie?
What is he not doing?
Seriously. Oh, man. Okay.
Yeah, so Morning Glory, Skyline, and Unstoppable next week.
J.J. Abrams presents Rhinestone 2.
Yeah.
Sex in the City 3.
Yeah.
There you go. You know what? I'll produce that. I'll produce Sex in the City 3. I need the money.
Kickstarter project.
Yeah. So, exactly. Give me the money to be the producer on Sex in the City 3.
Take the money.
These are all good ideas. These are all really good ideas, actually. Decided that I did not want to go to the movie this weekend. I'm not really sure why. I just wasn't in the mood, I guess. And I didn't... I'm not allowed to say why I didn't want to go see Megamind, because I'll get in trouble. But I think I already said why I didn't want to bother with Due Date. So instead, I thought that maybe we can discuss the Toy Story franchise this week, because... It's the...
Actually, you know, before you get into that, I do remember telling you right after I saw Megamind, Eve, you will love this soundtrack. This soundtrack for Megamind was tailor-made for you.
Well, not all of it, because wasn't there something from the Jonas Brothers on there?
I don't recall.
I looked at the list. After you said that to me, I looked at the list.
Well, that might have been one of those songs that didn't appear in the movie, but it's on the soundtrack.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, but...
Okay.
Songs inspired by the movie or whatever. Yeah.
But most of it is right up Eve's alley.
Oh.
That's cool. I mean, I do want to... Don't get me wrong. I want to see Megamind. I just didn't... I'm not a big fan of 3D like Justin is, and so I just... I don't know. I just don't... I didn't feel the need to run out and see it. I do want to see it, though, when it comes out on Blu-ray, so... So instead, we're going with the Toy Story franchise because it's the 15th anniversary of the release of the first Toy Story movie, and also the DVD and Blu-ray for Toy Story 3 just came out last week. So I thought it'd be a good time to talk about it, and Frank, our guest today, happens to love Toy Story and Pixar, right, Frank?
Oh my God, so much.
So why don't you tell us which movie is your favorite of the three?
That's not a fair question, and you know it.
like Josh says, that's like asking to pick between his children, right?
It really is, though. It really, really is. Okay. So my relationship with the Toy Story franchise is something – it's the stuff of legend. I remember being – I was 6 years old when the first Toy Story came out.
I was going to say you were six, right? You were like
yeah.
when it came out.
I was 6 years old when it came out, and I remember seeing the commercials for it on TV.
Were you really 6 years old when it came out?
I was. I really was.
I'm ending this podcast right now. I'm ending it. I'm on a roll now. Like every week, I end the podcast. Like so the guest will say something, and then now I'm like, Justin, cut it off. Cut it off, Justin. That's
back it up, people.
This is done. We're done. Okay. The 6 year old baby Frank ramblings. Okay. Go ahead. Now that I hate you, go ahead.
So, no hate. Yeah, I was 6 years old. I remember watching the commercials on TV and being like, I want to see this movie. It looks really cool. And I went to see it in the theaters. Well, I think it was the first film I actually saw in theaters. So it holds a very special place in my film geek heart. And I loved it. I've always loved it. You know, and it is a piece of history. It was the first completely CG film, right? So it is a milestone, a landmark film. And it started my love affair with Pixar that continues to this day with no end in sight. If I had to pick one, you know, you put me against the wall and hold a gun to my head, I'm going to say Toy Story 1. Toy Story 2 is just such an outstanding movie, mostly because, you know, I was older, I was more able to appreciate it when it came out. When did it come out? 2000? 99?
Which one? The second
Toy Story
one?
2, yeah. I think it was
99.
Thanksgiving 99, yeah. You know, that I was much more able to, I was 10 for that, so I was able to appreciate it a lot more. And then Toy Story 3 was really a full circle kind of experience. Because I went to see it like with my little sister and she's 18, but you know, we saw the first one together too. She was 3 when that came out. And so, you know, we saw that together, and then we saw Toy Story 2 together, and we actually went with a couple of our friends who were the same ages as us, 21 and 18. They were also brother and sister. So it was just, you know, there were tears everywhere as we saw the third one, and it was really a beautiful full circle kind of experience. So they're all very, very special films. I have always said, and I will amend it now, Toy Story 2 and now Toy Story 3, two of the best film sequels I have ever seen. I was extremely skeptical, especially of Toy Story 3, because I didn't see how they could keep it alive and keep it true to the original film. But they have managed to do that like no one else ever has. You know, and that's not counting like Star Wars or anything like that, because I don't really consider that a sequel. That was part of the original vision, you know, to begin with. These were literally like, it has a negative connotation, but these were tacked on to the first film, and yet they feel so much a part of the story that I love them.
Do you guys remember though when they were making Toy Story 2? At first, it was going to go direct to DVD, direct to video.
Yeah,
and then all of a sudden, I'm not sure what changed their minds, but I know all of a sudden they were like, nope, we're upping it and we're going to release it in theaters. And at that time, if you recall, Disney had been doing a lot of directed DVD releases for sequels, and they were, you know, lackluster at best. And
what, so, Cinderella 4 Adventures in Modern Recording wasn't your favorite?
Nay, you know, and it had they usually had terrible animation. Like I remember they did Lion King 2, and they did, was it Pocahontas 2, and then there was the Little Mermaid sequels, and they just weren't the same quality, not only the animation, but just everything about the music and all that stuff. And so when I saw they were doing a Toy Story 2 sequel, I immediately dismissed it, because back then, direct-to-DVD sequels were garbage, pretty much, you know? And then all of a sudden, they were like, nope, we're gonna make it theatrical. And I was like, oh, it has it now. I was like, it has a shot. And I remember I went to see it, and I loved it. I thought it was totally great. And I really – that first Toy Story movie, I have to say, was one of those movies that like change your life, you know, where after you see it, you're like, oh, it's like your eyes are open to things. And I didn't know what the first movie was about. I did not see it in the theater, and all I had seen was TV spots for it, where you saw you know, Woody, and he was like, you know, a cowboy character, and they're running around and all this other stuff. And so I just assumed that it was some Disney movie about a cowboy. You know, I had no idea that it was about toys and about the life of a toy and all that. I had no idea whatsoever. And I remember my friend came over to watch it with me. She had never seen it too because she had been under that same impression. And this is Crew Chick, who writes for Geeks of Doom also. She came over to my house, and she's a big Disney fan, as am I. And we put it on. We watched it. We were like, after like 15 minutes, we were like, this is the best movie. Like, what? Like, it was like weird how, you know, especially if you think back in 1995, like, my radar wasn't what it is today as far as TV spots, you know, like, if I see, like, I didn't dissect TV spots the way I do now. And obviously now everything is on my radar running Geeks of Doom. But, you know, back then I was, you know, in college or whatever, and maybe I just graduated college at the time, and you know, it just wasn't, you know, it was like I saw, you know, 30-second TV spot, and I'm like, oh, Disney movie about a cowboy, you know, and sure. I'm like, yeah, not that interested. And then I saw it, and I was just really blown away, and I could really relate, because as Justin can tell you, I don't get rid of anything. I'm very sentimentally attached to everything. So, you know, books and my CDs and everything is like, I'm very attached. And when I was growing up, I was very attached to my toys. And so, you know, the fact that the toys have anxiety about being given away or being thrown out and all that, like, I, you know, they got me. Like, they tugged at my heartstrings, and they really, really got me. I mean, I used to write notes to my toy, like to my dolls and such. I used to write notes to them when I was little if I felt that I had gone a long time without playing with them and that I neglected them. I used to write notes apologizing to my dolls. Like, I had a Raggedy Ann doll that I loved more than life itself. And I remember when I got a little bit older, I kind of, like, she just sat on the rocking chair and I didn't play with her that much or anything. And I wrote her a letter. And of course, you know, my mom still has the letter. And every so often, she likes to bring it up and be like, remember when you wrote the letter to Raggedy? I'm like, oh, my God, Mom. Yeah, I remember. Like, you don't have to keep bringing it up, you know? Like, I know, it's embarrassing. But, you know, so then I see a movie like Toy Story, and, like, now I'm really not embarrassed anymore that I used to write to my toys, because thanks to Toy Story, I completely believe that my toys have a life, and they want me to play with them, and they get sad when they're lonely, and, you know, so... it's totally, I'm totally like, see, Mom, you know, like, the letter matters, you know. But anyway, so, yeah, I totally related to it. And I like, I just loved it. And I think it's definitely one of the greatest movies ever. So, Justin, I know you said you liked Toy Story, but you didn't love it, right?
Yeah. And I wanted to
Right. That was the day we stopped being friends.
That's the day you killed our friendship via Twitter.
You were saying earlier you didn't know about Toy Story 2, the decision why they chose to make it a theatrical movie. According to Wikipedia, when Disney executives saw how impressive the in-work imagery for the sequel was, and due to pressure from Tom Hanks and Tim Allen, when they decided to make it into a theatrical movie. And at first it wasn't going the way that they wanted it to go, and then John Lasseter had to step in after, because he was off doing Bug's Life and promoting Bug's Life. So he came in and they had to rewrite the script and do a whole bunch of changes. So
I remember hearing some whispers of that. Mm-hmm. I guess mostly after the fact, but yeah. Right. Yeah.
And there was talk of a storyline where the toys got shipped back to China. It was a recall on the toys and they got shipped back to China.
Oh, man.
Was that one of the was that for Toy Story 2? They were throwing that around, or
I'm
3?
I think if it was 2 or 3. It was one of the sequels, I remember.
I bet you it was 2, because, you know, in 2 there was a whole thing about them being collectibles and stuff, so maybe that was they were going with that first. Mm-hmm. Were they remember they were going to be shipped off in Toy Story 2?
To Japan.
That?
Yeah.
Right. Mm-hmm. So maybe that was it. At first, they were going to get recalled to Japan, and then
could be.
They changed it to they're going to go to a museum in Japan.
Oh, yeah. No, I'm sorry. Okay, I'm looking here at the promotional art for Toy Story 3. Yeah, it was Toy Story 3. Buzz was going to be, he was malfunctioning and he was going to be shipped back to Taiwan.
But that's right, because I remember that, yeah, I remember thinking, oh, that's fun, because Toy Story 2 was all about Woody being, you know, being sent away, and now they're going to go and rescue Buzz. Like, that's, I remember thinking that that was kind of neat mirror, you know, imagery there.
Yeah.
Right. Yeah.
Okay. Yeah. So that's what it was. I'm sorry about that.
Mm-hmm.
But I guess my experience with Toy Story is, in, let's see, 95, I was in middle school, and I remember wanting to go see it because it was the first all computer generated film. So it was really a technical standpoint that I wanted to see the movie, and that's what stood out for me when I was watching it, was, wow, they're doing this all in three dimensions, all with computer-generated technology. So that was the thing that hooked me, was the technical aspect, and it was the achievement that I really loved, more so than the film itself. And the Toy Story franchise has always been one that I appreciate, and I liked it, but it was more from a historical standpoint than it was an actual story standpoint. And I found with John Lasseter films, same way with Bugs Life, same way with Cars, I have not liked them as much as, starting with Finding Nemo on, all of the Pixar movies have pretty much been perfect for me. Finding Nemo, Ratatouille, Incredibles, WALL-E, Up, all of those movies were just outstanding to me. And so that Pixar, I felt like, was a different type of, it's a different time in the Pixar studios than it was when they were creating the first Toy Story, Bugs Life, Toy Story 2. So I was anticipating Toy Story 3, but it wasn't something that I was anticipating like WALL-E or Up when I was really into the Pixar movement. But I did enjoy the third Toy Story, and I will say that I think the Toy Story trilogy is the best trilogy of films of all time, where each movie is good. There are a lot of trilogies that the first movie's good, Matrix, first two movies are good, Godfather, but it's very rare that all three movies in a trilogy are good. So I think Toy Story is the best trilogy of all time, although I would say my favorite trilogy is Back to the Future. But I will say that Toy Story, I think, is the best trilogy.
I was going to say, you're putting that above Back to the Future. Okay.
Yeah.
And it, just because it's more consistent, you feel?
Yeah, I think from movie to movie, I think there is not a better franchise or trilogy than the Toy Story franchise, just from a quality standpoint of each movie.
Interesting. Interesting. I mean, that's something that's a hard comparison to make. I mean, I wouldn't even be able to attempt that comparison.
Now, I think this last Toy Story 3, I think as far as tone, I think it got a lot darker. Would you guys agree that it was a much darker film? I felt like there were parts that I was like, wow, if I was a little kid, I think I'd be scared about now. And, you know, really harsh circumstances and that weren't in the previous films.
I really felt that they made Toy Story 3, they wrote it for me, like for my generation, for kids who grew up. I was a little kid when the first one came out, a little bit older when the second one came out. Now I'm an adult when the third one comes out.
Right. Like you grew up like Andy grew up.
And I really
so
did.
They're making it for the Andy in you, right.
My sister is Andy's age.
Right.
You know? So we definitely grew up with Andy. I definitely feel like it was made specifically with us in mind. I don't think that people of another age, little kids or people older than us, wouldn't enjoy it. But I think that we're kind of the sweet spot for that. People my age are the sweet spot for this whole trilogy. And so those darker moments really struck a chord with me, because those are things that I've experienced, you know, that growing up. And that's the stuff that I didn't experience all that long ago, really. You know, going off to college, it was only 3 years ago for me.
Right.
So it's a very familiar situation. And I have that special bond with those characters, with the toys. So seeing them in that those dark situations, near death experiences, actually was meaningful to me because I grew up watching these characters and loving these characters, and for a second they had me going there.
Well, I thought the whole movie was I didn't think there was hardly any upbeat moments in the whole film. Like, you start out with, the toys have dwindled down to a handful. They're living in fear of being thrown away or being put in the attic. They, in their minds, they're never going to be played with ever again. There's that scene where, like, they look around and it's like the room is empty except for the, I don't know how many they are, seven of them or whatever. And they're like, okay, some of us are gone, and they mention like Bo Peep, and you see Woody's face, and I'm like, oh my goodness, like how harsh is that? It's like so harsh. So, and that's how the movie begins. And I feel like it doesn't really ever get uplifting from there. Like, each scenario has more, it's more and more depressing. There's the thing with the clown, the sad clown, there's the thing with Big Baby. They had me through this whole movie. I was like devastated through the whole movie. Whereas, the first movie, it's kind of like, it's very upbeat, even though, there was that whole dissension with the toys and Woody, but it was still very upbeat. A lot of it was very funny, the first movie. I mean, think about the first time you heard the little aliens go like, the claw, he's our master, the mystic portal awaits, and so all those things you saw for the very first time, there's so many funny parts, and just the fact that Buzz Lightyear doesn't know he's a toy and he thinks he really is a space ranger, and he's like trying to shoot them with his laser, and Woody's like, that's just a blinky light, and so, and then in the second film, you have that. I love the whole opening of the second film with Zurg, that was so awesome.
That's inspired. That whole thing is inspired.
Definitely, definitely. So, and then they add more toys. That's the thing. It's like they add more toys to the batch for the second movie. Like, now there's a whole bunch of them, and now they have a bigger adventure to go on, and, more lessons to learn in friendship and all that. And then you get to the third movie, and it's almost like, it's like, they've lost how many friends, now you look at it, like, they're all gone. Even when they go to the, like, you have that one uplifting moment where they go to the daycare and they go, oh my goodness, like, this is the life, you have that one uplifting moment right there for the toys, but in your mind, you're going like, it can't. It can't be that good. Like, something's got to go wrong. And I feel like when it goes wrong, it's horrible. It's like really, really horrible. I'm like, oh my goodness, And then even at the end, what they go through at the garbage, I'm just like, wow. That is just, I don't know. I think if it was not an animated film about toys and it was a movie about people, it would probably be like an Academy Award winning movie. Yeah. It would be like The English Patient or something.
Right. Well, I mean, I agree with you. It was definitely had a much darker tone than the first two, but it had its comedy moments. The whole thing with Buzz in Spanish is hilarious.
Yeah, that was funny.
That part where Potato Head is sneaking around outside the daycare and like he puts his face on a cucumber and like on a tortilla.
Oh,
that
right.
Stuff is fun. The aliens are the aliens are the heroes of this whole trilogy. Mm-hmm. Because the claw saved every toy's life. Finally, and let me tell you, after 15 years of the claw, to finally have the claw like save everyone's lives was just the best thing ever. So there were some comedic moments still, but I agree. Yeah, I think especially after Up, they Pixar knows that they know
me,
how to.
By the way.
Oh yeah, yeah.
It's totally. I can't even watch the beginning of that movie anymore because it completely
That's it. I think after Up, Pixar discovered, hey, we do good tearjerkers, don't we?
Yeah.
Let's just, okay, all those kids who we you know, we brought into this whole new generation of animation in the 90s, let's rip their hearts out now. But, you know, it ends on a pretty positive, it makes you cry, the end, you know, but it ends on a pretty positive note, like, oh, we're going to be together for a long time, you know, and life goes on and all that kind of stuff, and a whole new generation gets to enjoy the toys now. And I think that maybe unintentionally, that's kind of symbolic of having a third film kind of brings the movies back into everyone's minds, kind of why we're talking about it tonight, right? Mm-hmm. And it will hopefully bring the movies to a whole new generation of kids now, and it'll go on and on, I hope.
Right. So what'd you guys think of the opening of Toy Story 3? I thought it was straight out of Back to the Future 3. What do you think?
I loved it. I mean, the fact that it recreates the scenario that we see Andy playing with the toys in the first film.
Right.
Because, I mean, I have the first film practically memorized. My friends and I quote it a lot. And so to see that scenario happening with the toys, oh, my God. It was like a little geek-gasm going on in my mind. It was fantastic.
Justin, did you like that opening?
Yeah, and that was, I talked about it in my review of Toy Story 3. That was really a showcase. We're talking about technology earlier with the first film. That showed the level that they could achieve now versus the level they could achieve in the first movie. I think technologically it's amazing how far they've come from 1995 to 2010.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I agree.
Yeah, I really did enjoy that opening sequence. But I got to say, Eve, I think you're shortchanging the darkness of the other ones, because you had the Sid character in the first one. There were some evil villains in the first two films that I felt the darkness was matched in the third one. Like, I didn't have the same sense that you did, that the overall darkness was more than the other ones. I thought it was equal to the other ones. And also, I agree with Frank. I think the comedy was equal in the third one as well.
Wow. Well, I don't know. I felt very traumatized by that third one for some reason. Like, I don't know. Like, I just watched it again this morning, and I still was like, I don't know.
Like, you didn't laugh at Ken?
No, I mean, I think it's great that they finally brought Ken in. And, you know, the whole thing. And you know what I like, too? The fact that when they made this movie to begin with, they didn't go with Barbie and Ken. And it wasn't a movie about Barbie and Ken. Like, they had other kinds of toys. And, you know, they had the Army Men, which I think is funny because I had the bucket of Army Men when I was growing up. And, you know, I just thought I had a Slinky, you know, I had those things. Okay. And so I thought it was cool that the toys that they actually went with. And I thought it was great, that whole introduction of, like, Buzz being the flashy toy. And so it, you know, like, the old toy that just had a draw, you know, like a drawstring, you know, like a pulsion, whatever the hell it's called, you know, as opposed to the one with buttons that lights up and, you know, he has karate chop action and all that. Like, I just thought that was a great dichotomy. So, So I like the fact that they weren't like, oh, here's Barbie and Ken, here's all these other trendy type of toys or whatever, that it was something different. But it is funny that they brought that, like, they brought Ken in, and then of course they gave him the Barbie dream house, which is hilarious. And they pretty much, like, every Ken joke in the book they ran with.
Oh, so, yeah,
like, they had him doing the fashion show. That was great. That was great. And oh, I like when Barbie dressed up as a astronaut so she could go get the what was it, the manual? She went to go get it. So that was cool. Yeah. And like, she's walking away, she's got the heels on, and the other toy sees the heels, and he's like, oh, yeah, you know, like, he thinks it's Ken, and he's like, yep, no. That's Ken walking around in heels, you know.
There he goes again.
So who is your favorite character from Toy Story 3, your favorite new character?
Ooh.
Mine was Mr. Prickle Pants from the moment I saw him to the moment he did his acting.
He was hilarious. He is hilarious. He's like, I don't want to break character, right? And he didn't want to talk because he didn't want to break character.
Yeah.
That was hilarious.
Timothy Dalton doing the voice was great. Every time I go to the Disney store, there's two things that I go straight for. One is Mr. Prickle Pants, and the other is Lotso Huggin' Bear. Mm-hmm. Those are my two favorite.
I don't like him. I don't want to see him. I don't want to know him. Nothing. Get him away from me. He traumatized me. Okay, Lotso. No, no, no.
I mean, that's like, that's what makes him a good villain, though. It's just like with Darth Vader. I think he's so bad that he's good. That's what I love about Lotso. And Ned Beatty, Otis Berg, Frank.
Right.
Yes.
That he did an amazing job as that character. Like, I did not recognize his voice at first.
Yeah.
So I really did enjoy that. I actually got a chance to meet him at the Superman celebration a few years ago. Nice.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
So, Frank, what about you? Who was your favorite new character from Toy Story 2?
Ken. Are you kidding me?
Yeah, that's what I said, Ken. Mm-hmm. Totally.
You said Toy Story 2, Eve. You meant 3.
I'm sorry, Toy Story 3.
Yeah, no, yeah. And Michael Keaton was great, too. And he had a great year. Michael Keaton was in Toy Story 3, and he was in The Other Guys. He had two very funny roles this year.
Mm-hmm.
Bring him back as Batman.
And
they should have had a Batman action figure, and he could have done the voice.
No.
I gotta say though, Michael Keaton's Ken so great was Jodie Benson's Barbie.
Oh yeah,
right. And you know she was great in Toy Story 2 as well. One of my favorite. You know, I'm Tour Guide Barbie.
Right.
But seeing her in this film too, just it was great. Especially if you're a Disney fan, since she's Ariel and she's like every female voice ever.
Yep.
It was really a great pairing. And if you see the behind the scenes footage of them doing their acting together, it's hysterical. So
now, you know what I really liked during the end credits, how they still had the movie going. You kind of had your epilogue going on. I thought the epilogue was awesome. That was so cool. It was so cool. At the end, you see like Zurg and all those other toys like show up at the daycare center and they're like, welcome to Sunnyside. Oh, that was hilarious. That was great. No, I love seeing like all that. That's what's great about the Pixar movies, because I think was it A Bug's Life? When they did A Bug's Life during the end credits, they had bloopers.
Bloopers, yes. And Toy Story 2. Toy Story 2 had bloopers too.
Right. They have the bloopers and outtakes, which it's hilarious because, you know, obviously there are no bloopers and outtakes for animated films, but they just make these characters so real to you that you believe it. Like, you're watching it and you're like, oh, look, Buzz flubbed his line, you know? I really love the Toy Story franchise. I love Pixar in general. I think the only film so far that I have not liked was Cars. I don't know why. It didn't grab me and I just wasn't that interested. And I keep telling myself I'm going to like try it again and see if I feel differently now because it's been a while. But that's really the only one that I haven't been into. All the other ones I've loved.
Cars had a great end sequence as well with all of the different car, like the different Pixar movies as Cars. They had at the drive-in movie theater. That was great.
Cool. So do you think that they'll continue the Toy Story franchise? Because they did make it where they were pretty much handing the baton to the next person. So do you think they'll keep going? And if they do you think it'll be profitable?
Oh, yeah. Yeah, that there's no question in my mind because – this movie made $1 billion. This is the most, I'm sorry, speaking of Toy Story 3, it's the highest grossing animated film of all time. There's no doubt in my mind that Toy Story 4 would bring in a lot of money. They've already said that they're going to do short films with these characters. So it's going to continue at least that way. I don't know if they'll continue in feature length format, but me personally, I would like this to be the last thing we see from Toy Story. Like, I would like this to be the close of this story and this franchise, because I just don't like things to go on and on and on and then just slowly wither out and die.
Right, like go out on a high note.
Yeah, I'd much rather have that. I mean, actually, to be honest, now I'm probably the only person who had this sentiment, but I wished it was darker, Eve. I wished they would have not been saved by the claw. I wish they would have been melted down.
Oh,
that
would have been
the best ending of all time, guys. Because they would have had the biggest set of balls of any animators of all time if they were going to kill all of their main characters.
Yeah, big balls, but you know they would have destroyed how many children's lives and my life too. I would have been devastated.
Justin, they would have big balls and $500 million.
Yeah. No,
Yes. I don't think mothers would be taking their little children to it if the toys got melted down.
No.
That would have been great because that was my favorite moment when they all held hands at the end.
That was the moment
where I was me and Dave, I'm not even joking, like my husband cries during movies. I'm outing you, babe. He cries during these kinds of movies, and like we were holding hands like the toys, and like we both were like, like we were both crying because we were like, no, you know, like we were like totally freaked out by it. So no, I would have been so traumatized. I would have had to go borrow a Xanax from someone after that because I wouldn't have come back from that. That would have been terrible. And like imagine, see, Justin, you don't have children. I don't have children either, but I have nieces and nephews, and I'm pretty sure that, you know, if I had taken them to see that when they were little, they would have been like, what, my toys are melted, like, you know.
Yeah,
Woody melted.
Give those kids a wake up call. Don't let them stay in dreamland all their life.
Oh, like you.
Yeah.
You're in dreamland.
No, I'm a realist, Eve.
You're Peter Pan. No, what they should have done for people like Justin is that could have been a special feature on the disc. It's like, if you want the toys, you get melted at the end. It's like, watch this, you know? Watch this R-rated clip, you know?
Yeah.
This is for you, Justin, back there.
Well, I'll admit, when I was in the theater seeing the movie, I really did think for a few seconds, and I don't usually fall for it, but they got me. I really thought, oh, okay, this is it. Oh my God, I can't believe they're gonna do it. They're gonna do it. Oh my God. And at that moment I was like, I can see how this is like a fitting end to it. Like the only way for them to go out is to go out together and like, you know, in a blaze of glory. But I
that's what I did too. I accepted it. I had my stage of denial and grief, and then I accepted it. I was like, yes.
Oh my God. I went through all those phases in about 30 seconds, but I was like, no, it's not happening. No, it's happening. Okay, I accept.
You know, normally I'm the same way where I go, all right, who's going to swoop in and save them? You know, like a lot of times you know, in movies like this where there's all the people are going to die, who's going to save them? You think like, okay, who from earlier in the movie is going to show up to save them, right? Or who did you think was dead that's going to come back? And like, you know, because we're so used to that. So, you know, you go, all right, who's going to make the comeback and save them? They got me too with this. Like, definitely did not know that. First of all, I didn't think anyone was coming back to save them. And second of all, I definitely would not have guessed who came back to save them.
Mm-hmm.
They got me. You got me, Pixar.
Yep.
Well, I think that brings us to the end of this episode. I think, you know, we could all agree that Frank and I love it, and Justin enjoys it and wants all the characters to die.
Yeah.
So, you know, maybe Justin, when you get a job at Pixar, you can work that out. One of the little shorts that they make can be a Justin Vactor character melting down all of the Toy Story, beloved Toy Story characters. Thank you, Frank, for joining us. It's always a pleasure to talk with you, and you have to come on again because I love you. And I'm not mean like Justin Vactor.
No, you're a friend.
You got a friend in me. Justin, why don't you tell the fine folks listening to us where they can find us on the internet?
You can always go to geeksofdoom.com. You can find us in iTunes at Flicks of Doom, FLIX. Or they can find us on Twitter, twitter.com/FlicksofDoom.
And where can they send you hate mail? for wanting to kill the Toy Story toys.
That is mail at tech-rambling.com.
Justin, reach for the sky.